Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good! And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
This is one of those songs when I hear it, I'm like either ready to play or ready to cheer on my team. There's just some songs that do that to you. Allison Hayes from ABC 57 joining me in studio. I know the CBS theme has changed throughout the years, but it's still as good as any. Kind of like the CBS college football theme too.
Yeah, it triggers it. You like, you know instantly what it is and what it represents. I just said to you as I heard that playing a minute ago, I said, "Oh, did you change the intro? I love it." You said, "Yes, just for tournament time."
Yeah, I made this probably 7, 8, 9 years ago. I was just thinking there's a lot of big plays and songs, you know, Living on a Prayer and Bryce Drew hitting the shot for Valpo, that it just felt like we needed an NCAA tournament theme. So I like to play this during
it.
The NCAA tournament. And maybe we'll be adding Purdue winning the championship.
Wouldn't that be
to
something?
To next year's show open. I mean, I could go ahead and make a new one. No problem doing that. But things to be done before we get to the Boilermakers adding their named to the list of NCAA national champions. And we'll have more March Madness coverage here on WSBT Radio, all the play-by-play, Thursday and Friday, the Sweet 16, Saturday and Sunday, the Elite Eight, and then it's off to Phoenix for the Final Four in 2 weekends. As an Illinois fan, we haven't been to the Sweet 16 since we made the title game in 2005, so there's a lot of electricity with the Illini fan base, and the Boilermakers are going well, but that's it for the Big Ten. The ACC somehow got 4 teams to the Sweet 16. They always have mediocre regular seasons the last few years, and then they get it together come tournament time. Then everybody's like, oh, see, they were better than everybody was claiming. I think the whole resume shows it's still a down conference, but hey, they're performing when the lights are on, so I guess I give them credit for that.
And I picked the Illini to get to the Sweet 16 in honor of you.
Thank you. I picked Iowa State to beat them, but I would switch that pick now.
Really?
And I'm not a homer. That's just an honest pick.
Watching the way that they've been playing.
And I think if Illinois got by Iowa State, they're one of the few teams that could at least challenge UConn because they can score with them. That's my thinking. Not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying they would have a better chance than most teams. All right, we will get to some basketball talk in our next segment as part of our Would You Rather. We've got our Sports Beat Twitter question of the day in the 6 o'clock hour. It's always one of the worst days of the year as a baseball fan. I'm going through my American League predictions. We'll do National League tomorrow because opening day is 2 days away, believe it or not. We've got Sizzler and Mike Singer from Blue and Gold Illustrated. We'll talk Notre Dame football recruiting in the 6 o'clock hour. But we had some Notre Dame football breaking news today. Too many really good players are on the sideline for the Fighting Irish. We found out over the weekend quarterback Riley Leonard had to undergo that second surgery on his injured right ankle. He is likely done for the rest of spring practice. And now you could argue the best defensive player is on the sideline. But I don't think this is as big of a deal or close to as big of a deal as your quarterback going under a second surgery on that right ankle. But cornerback Benjamin Morrison, he is done for spring practice. He had been dealing with a right shoulder injury. And we found out today that yesterday Morrison underwent arthroscopic surgery on his right shoulder, which will keep him out for the rest of spring practice, but the expectation is from the program that he'll be ready to go when the season gets started. August 31st, the Irish at Texas A&M. Of course, you got fall practice before that, and you would assume he'll be ready to go. So this is a minor setback, but this kind of goes into that maybe the Irish fan base being a little frustrated with key players not being on the spring practice field. Of course, at the end of the day, it's all about being ready when the bell rings on August 31st, but we've just had so many positives, and everybody's upbeat about the program, and it's the best shape it's been in years, and now we're just getting nicked away with these injuries that are frustrating. Not the end of the world, but just frustrating.
Yeah, and Morrison, you nailed it there. It's not the end of the world. It's if you're going to have an injury and if it's going to be to a star player, it feels like this is the right time for that to happen, and he's going to have time to heal up, whereas we're going to be transitioning to the news of Riley Leonard, the quarterback, having a repeat injury. And that, I just feel like, is a much bigger deal.
Well, here's the good news. The Irish have some really interesting young cornerbacks that they are developing, and they are going to be counting on them to play key roles this year, with Cam Hart going, of course, to the National Football League. You've got Jaden Mickey and Christian Gray, two guys that played last year in key spots, and they're going to be battling for playing time this year, probably at the field corner if they leave Benjamin over on the boundary side. So with Morrison on the sideline, maybe a tinker with Mickey or Gray flipping to the other side of the field. You still have O'Reliable and Clarence Lewis, who's still a part of this program. Maybe it's an opportunity eventually for a guy like Micah Bell, a freshman, to get some more opportunities. So at the end of the day, I think it's exciting for Gray and Mickey in a bad spot where you lose a guy to an injury. These two guys who are ascending so quickly, who showed us great stuff last year, and I have big hopes for them this year. They're going to get more repetitions, maybe on the field at the same time with the number one defense for the rest of spring. So this is a major positive in what, again, I've called just kind of a frustrating injury that required surgery for Benjamin Morrison.
And he's also an experienced player in an experienced defense that's returning just about everybody, including your defensive coordinator. He's not having to learn anything new, whereas Riley Leonard is a brand new player in a brand new system with a new offensive coordinator, and spring practice is very important for that transition.
Which transitions us into our other opening topics for today, since we covered Benjamin Morrison. I spent a couple of segments yesterday talking about Riley Leonard, the Irish quarterback, undergoing a second ankle surgery. So I'll kind of lay back a little bit. I want Allison to talk about this for a little bit. But let's refresh in case you have not been following. Saturday after practice number four, Marcus Freeman revealed that Riley Leonard, the transfer from Duke, had right ankle surgery for a second time. The first time was in January. And soon after, we saw videos of Riley running around. We thought, okay, all is well. But now apparently a stress fracture was starting to develop in that right ankle, hence the second surgery, which took the plate out that was placed in the ankle in January and put in a brand new plate, hoping this will take care of the situation. Marcus Freeman said there's a chance he could come back at the end of spring, but I think that's really a long shot based on the timetables for these injuries. So let's say he's not going to be back, and if he does, we'll be surprised, and that's even better news. So, second surgery to an ankle that was caused by Howard Cross initially in the Notre Dame-Duke game back in September, and it caused Leonard to miss time last year. Maybe Duke did him a misservice by bringing him back, but here we are, second surgery. So I guess, Allison, what is your level of concern with Notre Dame's possible and assumed starting quarterback needing a second surgery on that right ankle?
Legit concern. I think there, and for a few reasons. The first question is, you start to question the durability. That was a concern when I found out he was coming to Notre Dame in the first place. And when they did bring him back at Duke, and then he played on that ankle, and then re-injured it or continued to injure it. It was never healed right, whatever the case may be. Now he's doing the same thing. He gets here and he's re-injured it. It's not healing correctly. I hope they don't. At this point, don't try to rush him back and bring him in for spring because you need that ankle to be 100%. You need it to be healed. He's a running quarterback. He needs to be 100% healthy. He needs to be 100% confident in his ankle and not have any second guesses or question marks on taking that step when he needs to take it. And then, you know, I just touched on that. He absolutely needs the spring to learn that playbook and really to develop chemistry, though, with his teammates. He's the new guy coming in. He does not know the system. He needs to make some connections with these players, with these wide receivers. And the other guys that are behind him are going to have that opportunity to re-strengthen or to grow those relationships and to build new ones. The only one thing, which I mean, maybe it could be a positive, is that, you know, there is this ongoing quarterback battle. And now when you think there's a possibility, well, if this is the case, does that mean Steve Angeli is going to transfer? Does that mean Kenny Minchie is going to be the odd man out? It's most likely these guys are going to stick around now longer than maybe they would have otherwise. But it prolongs this quarterback competition now that's going to no doubt 100% carry over into the fall. Whereas maybe if Leonard had this incredible spring, or at least a really solid spring, and then goes into the fall with that confidence, you could feel like, okay, he was brought here to be the starting quarterback. He earned the job, and now it's his in the fall. Whereas now, someone else is most likely going to be making all of these strides in front of him, and now we start a whole quarterback competition all over again starting fall camp.
All right, so let me bring in the comments of Fighting Irish head coach Marcus Freeman after he made the announcement on Saturday. He was asked about how you deal with practice with Leonard on the sideline and you've got three quarterbacks that you can use. And also, does this surgery alter the timetable for announcing who Notre Dame's starting quarterback is going to be?
Right now, what we've done is just have Steve with the ones, Kenny with the twos, and CJ with the threes. And, you know, if we only go ones and twos with certain parts of practice, Kenny and CJ will rotate a little bit. And that's probably the plan going forward. Right now, we know, you know, Steve is ahead of the other guys just through experience, just through the evidence that he's shown us. And so it's kind of made it simpler for Coach Gadooley to kind of script reps, ones, twos, and threes. You know, it's easy to do that. You know, listen, at some point, we have to name a starting quarterback. And not having Riley for spring ball has kind of changed the process to being able to do that. But, again, all I'm going to say is that at some point, we got to name a starting quarterback. And when we feel like we're ready to do that, is it fall camp? Is it, you know, after spring ball? Is it I don't know. You know, and what we got to do is we got to continue to look at the body of work and you know, I love competition. And so the ability to have a quarterback competition is exciting to me because I think it makes everybody better. But I also understand, as Coach Denbrock and Coach Gadooley would say, is we need the continuity between a quarterback and the offensive line. So at some point we'll name one. I don't know when that time will be.
Well, I think we can say safely the announcement of Notre Dame's starting quarterback will not take place at the end of spring practice.
Right.
Because you need to see Riley Leonard on the field running the offense, which we will not be able to have that opportunity over the next month. Nor will he participate in the Blue Gold game, barring a major change. So we can eliminate spring practice. I just can't imagine, while you're running around in shorts in the summer, working with the offense, running routes, doing whatever, you're going to name the starting quarterback then. So it sure seems like, even maybe without the surgery, we were headed toward, at some point in fall practice, the starter would be named. Now, there's no rush, theoretically. You got to figure out what's best for the offense, and the offense is going to change if it's Leonard or Angeli. Those skill sets are different. So I think we should just prepare. Middle of August might be the best choice from the outside looking in to when we'll find out who the starting quarterback's going to be. And until then, we'll just have to wonder what the possibilities are and what Angeli in the offense would look like, what Leonard in the offense would look like, if something else happens and someone gets injured. What about Kenny Minchie? So we're just all going to be daydreaming until we get to the middle of August.
It kind of brings me back to when Buckner got hurt and didn't participate in the spring.
Right.
Then he comes back, he earns the starting job, and then what, two games in, and he is injured and is out for the rest of the season. So it's like, oh gosh, we don't want to relive that again.
All right, so it's a situation that Angeli, Minchie, and Carr are going to get more opportunities. Good for them. I wish they didn't have these extra opportunities because you really want your guy, Riley Leonard, on the field. I will say this, and this is a repetitive statement from last night, so if you listened, I apologize. But I mentioned last night, like you put it, I like the way you put it, it's frustrating, but it's a situation where I'm not panicking.
Yeah.
And I'm not panicking for a couple of reasons. They have quarterback depth now. If this is 3 years ago, I'm freaked out because a Buckner-Pine situation, you don't have the quarterback depth, we'd be in trouble here in South Bend. But Marcus Freeman has changed the way quarterback recruiting and bringing in transfer quarterbacks has taken place at Notre Dame, and now you've built depth. And I think you can get the job done with several of these guys as your quarterback during this season. Plus, I'd be freaked out if we had a second-year offensive coordinator maneuvering these rocky waters, but instead we've got, and I mean this kindly, Coach, a grizzly old veteran offensive coordinator who's been through the battles before in Mike Denbrock.
Absolutely.
If it's Jared Parker, I'm freaking out, no disrespect. But I'm really excited. We have a veteran guy that's not going to panic in Mike Denbrock, who can adapt to the skill sets of different quarterbacks. That's why I'm disappointed, maybe a little frustrated, but I don't think it's the end of the world. I think they can survive. All right, we'll get to a couple of more topics here real quick. NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, your biggest storyline so far.
I think the Calipari at Kentucky is pretty interesting to me, that loss in the tournament, and if he's still going to be around, and it's just they haven't made any moves, and it's this huge buyout. That's really interesting to me. And a team that's really impressed me so far, or the most, I would say, is NC State. To see what they did in the ACC tournament, they are just playing so great, and they've been fun to watch, and I did pick them to make a Sweet 16 run. By the way, I just want to brag on myself, but not that anyone cares about anyone else's bracket. My first couple of rounds were terrible, but my entire Sweet 16 is intact.
Nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
So I'm still alive. And I had NC State going to the Sweet 16. But looking at that matchup against Marquette, I'm taking Marquette. I picked them before watching, and I'm taking them still. I think their two guards are really good at Marquette, and they've got that experience. And that Colette kid, he's averaging double-double in the two tournament games that he's played in so far and shooting lights out at over 60%.
Yeah.
So I think NC State has been really impressive, but Marquette, I think, is going to get the job done.
I'll keep it short, running a little short on time. My biggest storyline is the impact of NIL and the transfer portal on the tournament, because look at how chalky the second round was. We have all the big boys in the Sweet 16. All the ones and twos made it. So instead of recruiting a freshman to fill a void on your basketball team, you can go grab a player from the Missouri Valley or the Mountain West, and they just can make a more complete team so quicker. And as you take away from the lesser conferences, it also lessens their chance of being good enough to beat the big boys. So I think this is a trend. I had Mike Lightfoot on the program last night, the Hall of Fame Bethel coach, and we had that very discussion that this might be the norm. Less Cinderellas
forward,
because Cinderellas are getting their players taken away. Prime example, SIU Carbondale out of the Missouri Valley, and I love the Valley. They had Lance Jones last year, now at Purdue, and Marcus Damask at Illinois. Damask, all Big Ten. Jones, a big part of the Boilermaker success. I'm not sure how they lost many games last year, But look at SIU decimated by the transfer portal.
What a great point. And, you know, I really hadn't thought about that in that way because we all love the NCAA tournament so much. There's so much conversation about don't change it, you know, keep it the way it is. And we love the Cinderella stories. Everyone right off the bat loving Oakland and everything that represented. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. NIL and the transfer portal is going to change the landscape of the NCAA tournament and sort of destroy one of the absolute best things about it.
I will say I like the upsets in the first two rounds, but I like the big boys this part of the tournament because I think we're going to have some amazing games. I mean, Florida Atlantic and San Diego State in the Final Four last year.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, just didn't have some oomph. Look at all the great teams still alive, so I think we could have some of the best basketball in March Madness in quite some time. All right, let me fire through these really quick. Team that's impressed you the most?
Sorry, I skipped ahead. NC State was they impressed me coming out of that ACC tournament, and they've been playing so hot.
I'm going to say Clemson because I didn't give them much of a chance to beat New Mexico or win the second round against Baylor, and here they are in the Sweet 16. Team that surprised you the most?
Duke. And that's because I didn't give them much credit coming in, and that was probably foolish on my part. I picked them to get to where they're at, but they're not the Duke of old, and so I haven't given them much credit for where they're at and how they're playing right now.
Even though they won the ACC with 5 games in 5 days, NC State, the Sweet 16, that has surprised the heck out of me. Now, they beat a 14 to get there, not taking anything away, but that makes it a little easier. Finally, Sweet 16 game you're most interested in watching?
Well, I love all of the games that are on the docket. It's really intriguing, but I am most excited for Purdue Gonzaga because I've totally jumped onto the Purdue bandwagon. I don't have a horse in the race, so this is my team now that I'm going to be rooting for the whole rest of the way. And I love Matt Painter. I love everything that he represents and what he's done with the Boilermakers. And Gonzaga always just has that history of, you know, they're kind of that. We don't know a lot about them because they're West Coast and we never see them. And then they come into the tournament and they always have these great runs. And they're supposed to have sort of a down year this year. But yet here they are once again in the Sweet 16. And you just never know what can happen.
I'm going to make a bold statement and go against the grain of some of the national media. I think Purdue beats them by double digits.
Yes.
I really do. I don't think it's a good matchup for Gonzaga. They already beat Gonzaga in Maui by 10 earlier this year. I think they win by more this time around. I really, really do.
I'd love to see the Boilermakers put a hurting on them. They need some of those definitive wins.
Absolutely. All right, my choice for the most interesting game I'm looking forward to coming up in this Sweet 16. I'm a homer. I think Illinois and Iowa State is going to be a beauty. Iowa State, number one in the country in team efficiency defense. Illinois, number one in the country in team efficiency offense.
Ooh.
So that is intriguing. And Terrence Shannon Jr. of Illinois is the second best player in the country behind Zach Edey. And having that go-to marquee guy can make a big difference. So I think Illini Cyclones is going to be a classic. And today is the 19-year anniversary of Illinois coming from 15 down with 4 minutes to go to beat Arizona to go to the Final Four.
Ooh.
So it's a big day for those of us that haven't had much to cheer about the last 19 years. All right, really quick, I want to get your thoughts as we wrap up this segment. The Irish women going to the Sweet 16. We talked a couple of weeks ago when we thought they were going to be a 4 seed. What was their ceiling? We felt like Sweet 16 was very realistic, but you ran into a 1 in the Sweet 16. But now they're a 2. So have you altered your expectations?
Well, I think I'm super impressed with the way that they played against Ole Miss. The defensive performance was huge and key. And you know you've got the big three, so you know you're going to have Maddie Westbeld and Hannah Hidalgo and Sonia Citron. You know those three are going to get the job done. Sonia had a double-double, her first of the season, which was surprising to me. But the fact that they had the non-big three, those players coming together and getting the job done allowed them to play that zone for their defense to play so well, and then everything else just kind of fell into place. So when you've got your big three doing what they're supposed to do, and then you've got your not big name players coming in off the bench or coming in those key roles. I think they're playing so well right now, and I'm really, really impressed with the way that they've been doing it. I do think that they're going to get the job done against Oregon State. I think on paper, though, that's an intriguing matchup. It's not a for sure done deal, but I think just the way how hot they're playing right now and how everything's coming together, I think Notre Dame can get that job done. But then, if I'm right, they would advance to play South Carolina or Indiana, correct?
Yeah.
And that's where I think the end of the road is for the Irish. South Carolina is at another level. And I mean, Notre Dame is at a different place than it was when they played at the start of the season in that opener in Paris where they got absolutely demolished. But I just think that South Carolina is just too much to handle for the Irish this season.
I think this game against Oregon State would be the first time where possibly the short bench could affect them.
Yes.
But then again, South Carolina, oh boy. We'll worry about that when we get there, I guess. All right, Allison Hayes, Darren Pritchett with you. That's our opening topics for tonight. We'll come back and we will play the segment that we call Would You Rather? And there's some basketball and football conversation to be had there. Stick around, more Sports Beat coming up on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
I'm catching on the hosel, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Moving my head?
Yeah.
Clearing too early. I'm clearing too late. My swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
The crowd is just on its feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess.
Four! Please. Darren Pritchett is now broadcasting.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
On Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
I'm joined by Allison Hayes from ABC 57. We continue on with Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat in the 5 o'clock hour here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We're going to play Would You Rather in this segment where I come up with a statement, I give you a couple of choices, and we'll decide which is the better choice. Normally, I do this by myself, so I'm excited to have someone to argue with or say, you're exactly right. We'll see how it goes. So, Allison, let's give it a shot here. Here's our first one. Would you rather have as your team entering the Sweet 16 with hopes of winning a national title, UConn or Purdue?
That's tough because I am, you know, I am definitely rooting for Purdue on this, but I'm taking UConn. I have UConn winning the whole thing, as does the majority of the country. I was reading that like they're the overwhelming pick this year, but I do think they're going to be the first team to win back-to-back titles since Florida did it, my alma mater.
That's right.
And I just like. I love that the Huskies have those veterans that they had with that experience from last year coming back. They added a top four recruiting class to the mix, including five-star freshman combo guard. That dude, Stephon Castle, he is so good. Immediate impact he had on the team. And earlier in the season when he wasn't able to play with an injury, they suffered because of it. So they've been through some adversity early on in the year as well. And also, I love Dan Hurley. That family. He is intense. I love the way he coaches. I like the way he talks. I like that he's kind of tough with the media too. And I like that he's like, that they're the best team in the country. We've been showing it all season long, and I'm buying in on that. So I love Purdue. I don't have them getting it done. I've got the Huskies going all the way.
Before I answer the question, I'm going to send out this branch to the Boilermaker fan base, because for some reason, and I don't understand it, Illinois and Purdue are the last two Big Ten teams alive, and there's so much fighting going on social media and message boards between the two teams. Now, like the ACC, they're always so proud that when they do well, they do it together.
Yes.
And the Purdue and Illinois fan base, it's not like they're major rivals. I mean, I'm an Illinois fan. I don't consider Purdue a rival.
Right. It's not Indiana, Illinois.
And, yeah. And then because of some things that happened 30 years ago, Illinois and Iowa fans absolutely despise each other. But Purdue and Illinois have always played nice through the years. And I just don't understand the animosity. We need to come together as fan bases and support each other, because it's been over 20 years since Tom Izzo and the Spartans cut down the nets, the Flintstones. So it's been a long time. The Big Ten needs to win one. So Boilermaker fans, Illini fans, enough. Let's support each other, because Illinois's got Iowa State and then maybe UConn, and Purdue's got Gonzaga. So we got to root together. I'm tired of all the grumpiness. So with that being said, I want a Big Ten team to win the national title, but the answer is UConn for every reason that you gave. These two teams have been the most impressive, in my opinion,
all season
so far in the tournament and throughout the season. I mean, Purdue's resume coming in was awesome. And UConn, they've won 8 straight games in the NCAA tournament by double digits. Winning 4 games in a row by 1 point is almost impossible. But to win 8 by double digits, it's really unheard of. And I just think they are a locomotive right now.
Yep.
And I think Illinois would have a better chance than Iowa State, because Illinois can match the points of UConn. But long way to go before we get to that over the weekend. But, yeah, I think UConn right now would be the team I would choose if I had to pick between UConn and Purdue. Now, this is kind of a different question. I know we're comparing females and males. That's not the point. We're talking about skill sets. So would you rather, if you were building a team, would you rather have Caitlin Clark of Iowa and her offensive upside, or would you go with the unicorn of the men's game in 7'4", Zach Edey of Purdue?
Now, I don't mean this in any negative way at all, but and Caitlin Clark is amazing. She'll go down as the best.
I bet you I know what
possibly
you're
of all time. But you can find more players that can do some of what she's doing, or you can have a combination of players do what she's doing. You don't find 7'4" just willy-nilly. I'm taking Zach Edey 100%. I think he is just so good. He's so good, not just because he's tall. Ask Matt Painter that question. But, man, 7'4", and to have the skill set that he has to go with that height, for sure. Unicorn all day.
I think it's a no-brainer at Zach Edey. You just can't find a player like that. Watching him play hockey and pitch in baseball when he was a kid is phenomenal. He had great he just looked smooth. He wasn't awkward, I guess is what
really?
I'm trying to say. There's so many big guys that are awkward when they're kids.
And here I'm currently
smooth.
Googling Zach Edey playing hockey.
Oh,
that
awesome.
Is something I have to see.
Yeah, he was a hockey player for a long, long time. And I appreciate Caitlin Clark's game. It is unique, all-time leading scorer in college basketball history. But if I have to build a team around those skill sets, I'm going with Zach Edey, because he causes so many headaches for the opposition. And I was thinking about this the other day, and it's not a fair question, because if you don't have Zach Edey, Matt Painter has another scholarship to use, and he may have another great big man. But without Zach Edey, is Purdue a top 10 team? And I think they're borderline.
Yeah.
They lose a little bit of their efficiency just because when teams double Edey, it leaves someone open on the outside, and they're a great three-point shooting team. So I think they're a top 20 team. I don't know if they're top 10 when I look at it. But, again, we don't know who would be replacing Edey. They may have someone in the portal that's averaging 20 points per game, and maybe they're just as good. But they're still awfully good. Lance Jones has made that team so much better.
Absolutely.
Okay. Would you rather have Purdue's Matt Painter as your head basketball coach or Kentucky's John Calipari?
That was a good one. This was interesting to me, and I, you know, we talked a little bit about him earlier, but I think I would take Matt Painter. I like him as a coach. I like him as a person. He's been there for 19 years. He has an impressive record and resume. Obviously, Calipari also has that impressive record and resume, but he's also had scandal and violations, and we're not seeing the same production out of the Wildcats that we saw years ago. And my theory on this, now this is not substantiated by any means, but I feel like he was very successful in recruiting for a time period when NIL wasn't allowed. So I feel like he might have been doing some shady things to get those talented players to come. And now with NIL, everybody can kind of do these shady things, but they're legal. And so he's not able to compete the way that he was before. And another thing to point out, when you look at all these numbers, and I've got all these things I can say, five Big Ten conference tournament championships and NCAA tournaments and Sweet 16 appearances and all these things for Matt Painter. The thing is, in 19 years, he's had just nine players who've gone on to the NBA. In a stretch for Calipari from 2002 to 2018, all 25 of his players that he coached and chose to enter the NBA not only went to the NBA, they were first-round draft picks. Yeah. That there's a huge difference there, and that's where I think the whole shadiness kind of...
Sure. I was a little taken back by Calipari after they lost to Oakland in the first round. He started talking about the young guys on his team, working with freshmen. There is no rule in college basketball that says you have to bring in all freshmen. You can build your roster in many different ways. He just acts like he's got to bring in freshmen, and that is something that is hindering their progress. You don't have to.
Right.
Don't make it an excuse that they're young.
Right.
They're very, very talented.
Well, and that was also part of his charisma, right? I mean, he was a one and done. He created one and done. Those were guys that came for 1 year and left, and that started a trend around the country. So now you can't complain about that you're having to bring in new guys every year. And now with the transfer portal, you can bring in guys with experience if you want and don't have to bring in true freshmen.
Yep. Well, Calipari's been to the Final Four numerous times, won a championship. Purdue, Matt Painter has never been to the Final Four. But I'm taking Matt Painter, and for one major reason, I believe, just based on the last 5 years, let's narrow it down, he is a better roster builder than John Calipari.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Painter doesn't just go for the five-star electric 30-point-per-game score in high school. He finds pieces that fit his system. Braden Smith was not a wow recruit coming out of high school. He had a bad game against FDU last year with seven turnovers, but he's improved this year. He's an all-around player. And this is a guy John Calipari wouldn't have given the time of day to. But he fits Matt's system. Fletcher Loyer does the same. Sure, he has Zach Edey, and that is a major advantage. But I just think Matt does a better job of finding the right players, no matter their stars, to fit into his system. And Calipari is really struggling with that at this time. Plus, I think Painter is a better game manager at this particular time. So even though the other guy's got a national championship, I'm going with Matt Painter over John Calipari.
And what you just said is literally almost word for word what Notre Dame men's basketball coach Micah Shrewsbury told me about one of the things he loves about Matt Painter is that he doesn't care about numbers. He doesn't care about stars. Mm-hmm. He finds the guy that fits his system, his program, what works for Purdue basketball. And I give him a lot of credit and respect for that.
And that's why I'm excited about Micah. I think he's been around such a talented coach, he and Brad Stevens, that he has learned so much, plus what he wants to do.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see some really good things in the next couple of years out of the Fighting Irish. All right, Allison Hayes, Darren Pritchett with you. We continue on with our Would You Rather segment. Oh, boy.
This was a killer.
All right, here we go. Would you rather have on your college basketball team Skylar Diggins or Hannah Hidalgo?
Oh, my gosh. Can you go wrong, really?
This was easy for me.
Was it?
Yes.
Well, it was tough for me, but I think it's because I was watching Skylar Diggins. I was shooting her games in eighth grade. I was interviewing her in eighth grade. I followed her. You know, you have that connection with the family. Her presence on the court was unlike anything I've ever seen by a women's basketball player. That fieriness to go with the talent. And then on top of that, I felt like Skylar really sort of changed the perception of women's college basketball. She was a new face and sort of ushered in a whole new world of marketability, and she really kind of changed the women's game in that sense. So it's hard because she was such a stud then, and now you've got a whole new generation that watched women like Skylar play who are now making their own mark. But talent for talent and the whole entire package, that's where I think I'm struggling, is the whole package. I think Skylar had that full, complete package with the – she was almost a coach on the floor as well, and I loved her. But I think if I had to pick one – at both of their primes, I think right now I would go with Hannah Hidalgo. I think her upside, she's just scratching the surface of what she can do. And while she's kind of quieter in that sense of on the court, her ability, her skill set, her what she is doing right now is unbelievable and just absolutely sky's the limit for her and what she could do with Notre Dame. I'm so excited about it. Also, just on a side note, imagine with the way things have changed, how much money Skylar could have made in NIL back in her time. She was, those headbands that she was wearing, the Adidas headbands, those were selling out, in her jerseys and all that. And she didn't get a single dollar for any of that stuff. I mean, she's done quite well for herself since, but I just think that was it. It was more like not just the sport. She transcended the sport. Whereas I don't think Hannah is at that level of transcending, but I do think her actual ability is unbelievable.
Hannah has the disadvantage of living in the Caitlin Clark world right now.
Yes.
And South Carolina being undefeated.
Right.
There's a lot of storylines. I am not going to argue with anything you said about Skylar. You nailed on and off the court how she impacted the game. But Hannah Hidalgo is the easy choice. And all I have to do is read the numbers.
Yep.
I'll give you Skylar's senior year, and I'll give you Hannah's freshman year. So Skylar's several years older than Hannah's freshman year. Points per game, Diggins 17, Hidalgo 22. Rebounds per game, 6 apiece. Assists per game, Diggins 3, Hidalgo 6. All-time steals leader in Notre Dame history is Hannah Hidalgo. And shooting from the field, Diggins as a senior, 42%. Hidalgo as a freshman, 45%.
Wow.
The stats
yep.
make it an easy choice. And she's great defensively, which shows up in the steals, but... she's at the top of the scouting report, and teams can't stop her. I'm amazed by her.
She's an absolute game changer.
And she's only a freshman. We have it for sure 2 more years of Hannah Hidalgo. I can't imagine she would leave any earlier than that to the WNBA, but next year could be very interesting
yes.
for the Irish with the big girl they have coming in and the parts coming back. It could be a go time. So we both say Hidalgo.
Yes.
All right. Next up, would you rather have the number one wide receiver or number one running back in the country on your favorite college football team? And we can use Notre Dame as an example. So who would you rather have? You could choose one, the best wide receiver in the country or the best running back.
Oh, man. This is a killer. Well, I mean, Notre Dame had one of the best running backs in the country last year, but it wasn't quite enough because of the way the offense was working and the lack of wide receiver for Sam Hartman to throw to last season. So my initial reaction was I wanted to say running back because you can have a great receiver, but if you don't have a great quarterback throwing the ball, how much of a difference does it make if you've got a great receiver? But then you could say, well, if you've got a great receiver, he makes your quarterback look good. So I've been literally going back and forth on this all day. It's a toss-up to me. I don't know. I think I'm always going to want a good run game because that opens everything else up.
I'm going to go wide receiver on this one because the game is becoming such a passing game nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I can piece together a running back or two to get the job done. But when you have a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. for Ohio State or the player at Washington, I can't think of his name. There's a Z in his name, and I'm drawing a blank here. But when you have one of those guys, they are so electric. And I just think a number one wide receiver against college cornerbacks,
that's advantage
wide receiver. Unless Benjamin Morrison is against Marvin Harrison. That was a different story. Morrison shut him down. But I just think it's harder to find that top wide receiver. And it's such a passing game. I'm going to lean toward having the number one wide receiver and then piece together the running game from there. And maybe I have a quarterback that runs well to help just a little bit. So we'll see. All right. Finally, the over-under for win totals in the NFL came out on DraftKings Sportsbook yesterday. The Chicago Bears, we assume Caleb Williams of USC will be their starting quarterback. They've added a lot of parts. The over-under win total for the Bears is 8.5. So they would have to go 9-8 or better to top that number if you go over. What do you think?
I am a Bears fan. I'm not 100% convinced yet on Caleb. I feel like whatever move they make is going to be the wrong move. And no matter what, he's going to be a rookie in his rookie season. And there's going to be some growing pains there, even if he does turn out to be a generational talent, as everyone says. So yep. I might think that they might go under that. I hope not, but I'm thinking they might be under.
I'm going to go slightly over.
Oh, gosh, I hope.
I think they have such an established defense coming back.
True.
It was really good the second half of last year. You get Allen as your wide receiver from the Chargers to be the top target, or DJ Moore for the new quarterback. They got Swift to be their running back. Plus, I just feel like they've got a really good chance to beat the Vikings twice.
True.
Because they don't have Kirk Cousins anymore. You've got probably a really good chance to split with the Packers. So there's 3-1. And then maybe you can split with the Lions. There's 4-2. So then you need 5 other victories to fill the void. So I don't think they're going to win 11 games, but I'm just thinking they might win 9. So I'm just going to take the risk and go barely over 8.5 for the Chicago Bears. But if their defense takes a step back,
yeah,
there's no way I'm going to be right. I'm banking on that unit being really, really good again this year.
How far out do you think the Bears are from a playoff run?
I don't know if I would say it's no chance next year. I would say it's less than 50%. But the year after, if Caleb Williams is as good as people believe he's going to be,
yeah,
why not the Bears?
Heck yeah.
With that defense, why not the Bears? All right, Allison Hayes, Darren Pritchett with you. That is Would You Rather. Quick timeout. Twitter question of the day coming up next on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
If you're...
This is the Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat Twitter question of the day from Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
I'm Darren Pritchett with ABC 57's Allison Hayes, and it's time for our Sports Beat InsideIndySports.com Twitter question of the day. On Monday, I asked you this question. What best describes your feelings after hearing Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard had to have a second surgery on his injured right ankle? I offered 3 choices. Number 1, you're a little freaked out. Number 2, I'm concerned. Or number 3, nah, I'm not worried at all. Well, I'm happy to report only 7% said they're a little freaked out at this time.
That is shocking to me.
You thought it'd be more?
Yes.
Well, that plays into today's question, which I'll explain in a moment. Second in the voting at 39%, the Irish fan base not worried about Leonard having a second surgery on his right ankle. And winning the vote, 54% went with they are concerned. How would you have voted?
Can I replace concerned with frustrated?
That's a good one.
That would have been
a good choice, actually.
Yeah, I'm frustrated by it. It's just like I had that concern the first when we heard he was coming, and you knew that he had that ankle injury. You knew that they tried to play him on it, and then he couldn't finish the season. And then brought him in, and it was like, oh, he's fine. And then it was, oh, he's actually not fine. He had to have surgery, but he's fine now. And now, oh, he's not fine again, and he's got to have another surgery. But now he's going to be fine. What? Yes, I'm concerned by that. He was brought here for a reason. He was brought here because he is expected to be the number one starting quarterback, and he's going to miss a very valuable spring where he needs a lot of time to learn. And we kind of touched on this in the first half hour, so I won't repeat myself too much. But, yes, concerned and frustrated. I can't believe people actually said they're not worried about it at all. Why? Just because it's spring? Are you not looking ahead?
Which leads us to today's question. This is why I asked it. So today's question, which you can find on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. Yesterday, 39% of people who voted said they are not worried about Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard undergoing a second surgery on his right ankle. What is the biggest reason why you voted that way? 4 choices. Number 1, there's plenty of time before game number 1, August 31st. Choice 2, Steve Angeli is the backup, meaning you have confidence in him. Choice three, the overall quarterback depth. Or choice four, other, and I asked people to specify with a reply to the question why you chose that particular choice. So there you go. Plenty of time before week one. And Jelly is the backup, quarterback depth, or other. So your vote is?
Well, I did technically say concerned. I did not say that I'm not worried. And I guess I would have to say if I'm not like totally freaking out, it would be because of the quarterback depth. Not so much because Steve Angeli is the backup, but more because I do have some faith in Kenny Minchie. And I, again, kind of talked on some of this in that first half hour, so I don't want to go too much back into it. But I do think I am concerned. I think I'm not totally freaking out because of having guys like Steve and Kenny back there. But I just think that the springtime is very important. And also maybe because of the Sam Hartman factor, I was 100% bought in on him coming in last year, and then it didn't quite pan out the way that expectations were. So now I feel like I've tampered down all of those expectations, and I don't want to put too much on Riley Leonard. So that would be the part that's keeping me from totally freaking out over it.
Okay, very good. I'm going to be really curious to see how the voting wraps up on this one, because you could argue you could put all three of the main choices together, and that's why you're maybe a little concerned, but not freaking out. But I'm really hoping to see what the real reason is why there's a lot of people that are just like, I'm concerned, but there must be a lot of positives. So I'm curious to find out what the positives are. We will find out when we announce the voting on tomorrow's program, but we would love for you to vote on Twitter X. My account is at 960SportsBeat. All right. We wrap up this hour. Anything you'd like to promote?
Well, I am hitting the car and hitting the road because I'm going to Niles High School tonight. It's happening right about now. The One Community, One Goal. It's a charity basketball event. Myself and my husband, Mayor Nick Shelton of Niles, we're coming in as guest coaches to represent our alma mater. I'm a Niles Viking. He's a Brandywine Bobcat. Okay. And it's really cool. And it was a service learning project that students from Niles came up with to raise money for the Ferry Street Resource Center, which is an organization that helps out people in need in our community. And it's a lot of fun. They're having Niles. It's one game, but they're breaking it up into four quarters. And it's Niles staff versus Brandywine staff first quarter, Niles staff versus Niles seniors second quarter, Brandywine staff versus Brandywine seniors third, and then in the fourth, it'll be Brandywine seniors versus Niles seniors. So it'll just be a lot of fun. If you're out and about and you want to swing by, it's only $2 at the door. They've got raffle prizes and silent auction items, and again, all going towards a good cause.
Where's it at again?
At Niles High School.
Niles High School. Taking my son to the Landsharks facility, driving by Niles' new football field. The turf looks fantastic.
It is awesome.
Great for them. Great for them. They had a really good year.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yep, sure did.
All right. Very good. Well, I appreciate the conversation as always. Enjoy your event. We'll talk to you very soon.
All right. Thank you.
That's Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. More Sports Beat coming up in a moment on Sports Radio 960 WSBT South.
You don't know how to play first base. It's not that hard, Scott. Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Every time you play one off your hips, you owe me 40 sit-ups. On Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey, you guys, don't throw me anything. My girlfriend put a curse on my glove.
Here's your host, Darren Pritchett.
Get out and gag the ball around the end. You know what that makes you. Hurry.
Lollygag.
6:19 at WSBT. Darren Pritchett back with you on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Barnabys of Mishawaka and Granger, First State Bank, Bethel University's Adult and Graduate Studies, Bethel University Athletics, and Midland Engineering Company. Well, opening day for Major League Baseball is coming up on Thursday. And it's time to make some America League predictions for the 2024 campaign. Don't write these down because these never hit, but we will give it a shot. And we will start in the America League East, where I believe the Baltimore Orioles, the young, exciting squad, is going to win the America League East. They added Corbin Burnes a starting pitcher at the top of the rotation from the Milwaukee Brewers, and that will enable Baltimore, along with some great young hitting, to get the job done in the American League East. I've got the Toronto Blue Jays in second, the Tampa Bay Rays in third. I think the Yankees still have pitching problems. Gerrit Cole's out for the first part of the season. I've got them in fourth. And the Red Sox are a confusing team right now with what they're trying to do roster construction-wise. I've got them in fifth. The America League Central. It's between two teams for me, the Cleveland Guardians and the Minnesota Twins. The Twins have the better offense, but I believe the Guardians starting pitching will be the difference in this race. I've got the Guardians edging out the Twins in the AL Central. I've got the Tigers in third, the Royals in fourth, and the White Sox trying to rebuild once again, trading away Dylan Cease. I've got them in fifth place. In the America League West, this is a fascinating division. You've got the defending world champions, the Astros, who go to the ALCS every year. The Mariners might have the best starting rotation in the majors. The Angels without Shohei Ohtani, and then there's the Oakland A's. I've got the defending world champion Rangers winning the division. They will get back DeGrom and Scherzer at midseason, and that rotation should be stacked if they stay healthy and if they perform to their capabilities. I've got the Astros in second. The Mariners, tough to put them in third with the rotation I love. Angels just still not there in fourth. Mike Trout, another missed postseason. And the A's, they come up in fifth place. So my division winners in the America League, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Texas. My wild cards are the Houston Astros, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Minnesota Twins. In the America League Championship Series, I'm going very chalky here. Not going out on a limb. I believe in the Baltimore Orioles. I think they will add another starting pitcher at the deadline to enhance their team. So I'm going the Baltimore Orioles to the World Series, taking out the defending world champion, Texas Rangers, in the America League Championship Series. I think Houston's made the ALCS seven straight years. That streak, in my opinion, will come to a close in 2024. We'll pick the National League tomorrow. Will the Cubs win the NL Central? We'll have that conversation tomorrow here on your home of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Notre Dame football recruiting talk with Mike Singer is coming up next.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. WSBTRadio.com, the WSBT Radio app, and on Twitch as Darren Pritchett talks Notre Dame football recruiting with Blue and Gold Illustrated insider Mike Singer.
Well, our conversation, of course, on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 960 AM WSBT, but also available on the Blue and Gold YouTube channel. I'm Darren Pritchett with Mike Singer. And Mike, with spring practice well underway, big recruiting weekend for the Fighting Irish centered around spring practice. So what were your takeaways from last weekend?
Yeah, Darren, there were a handful of 2025 commits. You had a few notable class of 2025 targets, and then a few, more like 10, class of 2026 players, so current high school sophomores going into their junior year in the fall. Guys that Notre Dame offered on Pot of Gold Day last week. So it was a pretty busy recruiting weekend for Notre Dame. You know, on Monday afternoon, I wrote an article titled The Gold Standard, where I went into some of the big talking points that come out of the weekend. And we'll cover that a little bit in today's video, and definitely recommend folks check that out over at blueandgold.com. But, you know, I'd argue the biggest visitor for Notre Dame this weekend is Deuce Knight. He's been committed to the Irish since September, but you know, when you have a 6'4" and a half, 200-pound quarterback committed who runs in the 4-5 range and a 40-yard dash, you know, it's always important when he's on campus. And it's been notable that, you know, Alabama, Ole Miss, and even Deion Sanders in Colorado have continued to push for him despite his commitment to the Irish. And, you know, he hasn't taken any visits, to my knowledge, nor does he have any visits set up, but he's still in communication with those schools. So you want to make sure that you're getting Deuce Knight to campus as much as possible. And that's what he did. He got to South Bend late Wednesday night, was greeted by a handful of media members, which is interesting. And then, you know, full day Thursday, full day Friday, and then most of the day Saturday. So he had a really good visit, great time with the Notre Dame coaching staff. And then on Saturday, I'll add this, that one source kind of compared Deuce Knight and how he was with these other prospects, like Drake Bowen. Darren, if you remember in all of our times chatting about Bowen in the 2023 class, such a great ambassador for Notre Dame, visited just all of the time. And he wouldn't come to campus for himself to get any new experiences. It was really just to recruit other prospects. And, you know, when you had a bunch of other players on campus Saturday, I was told that Knight was kind of like free roaming, just really wanting to build relationships with the other prospects on campus, and you know, kind of did his own thing in a very good way. You know, recruiting guys like Mark Zachary and Derek Meadows, who we'll talk about in a second, who are big 2025 targets for the Fighting Irish. So, really good visit for Notre Dame. My sources are pretty excited. You know, obviously about Knight, but how good they're feeling about him. I think for a minute there, you're concerned about Alabama, and you should still be to some extent. Because he's still in communication with those schools at least a little bit. But, yeah, you feel good coming off of this visit. I asked him if he's going to return to the spring game in April. He was like, I mean, I don't have anything locked in, but if the commits are going to be there, then I will be. And they're going to be there. That's always a huge recruiting weekend. And he has his official visit scheduled in June. So he's continuing to get to South Bend there. And that was his seventh visit to campus. Sounds like 8 will be for the Blue Gold game next month, and then number 9 will be the official visit in June, and you certainly expect him to return for the fall a couple times. So that's definitely big. Deuce Knight, you know, returning to Notre Dame. And then Notre Dame's already getting a head start on the 2026 class, Darren. We talked about this a good bit. You know, at the quarterback position, Noah Grubbs from the Orlando area, he was on campus Friday and a little bit at Saturday. His visit exceeded expectations. All of the visits you expect to go well, but this one went tremendous. I think we've been talking about this. I think between Noah Grubbs and Brady Hart, who is a 6'5", I believe like 185, 190-pound passer, also from the Sunshine State, I think Notre Dame's going to get one of these two guys in Grubbs and Hart, and Notre Dame would be ecstatic. Definitely check out the Gold Center for more on Noah Grubbs. And then from Indianapolis, Ben Davis, I feel like, Darren, we talk about him every single week, this four-star cornerback. His visit went really well. I think this is a Notre Dame-Florida battle. He did grow up loving Florida, but I like where the Irish stand for Zachary, especially coming off this visit. Derek Meadows from Las Vegas, Bishop Gorman. Notre Dame leads here, and I think that the Irish lead even more for this 6'5", 185-pound receiver from Nevada. Really good visit here. Connects well with Deuce Knight. Notre Dame had three other receiver commits on campus this weekend in the 25 class. Those guys connected well with Meadows. Really like where Notre Dame stands, despite some other big-time programs being after him. And then I would love someone to tell me, because I forget, the last player Notre Dame had from modern day. You know, Notre Dame just has not had great success in recent years at this powerhouse program in Southern California. They would like to flip their fortunes here with Chuck McDonald, a four-star cornerback in the 2025 class. USC, Oregon, LSU, Georgia, some other teams to watch here. But hearing that McDonald's looking at getting back to South Bend after this visit, which is definitely a good sign. Follow the visits is my mantra. McDonald getting back to Notre Dame, you know, potentially in a couple months. That's good news. But I still feel like, you know, USC probably the team to beat for Chuck McDonald. So there were other visitors on campus over the weekend. You can definitely read more about those guys at blueandgold.com.
Mike, a couple of follow-up questions from the quarterback conversations we just had.
Sure.
I know it depends on personality and openness and those type of things, but isn't there something about a quarterback that is willing to be involved in the recruiting process? It's one thing if it's a receiver, a running back, but it just seems like the quarterback position is a little different and people draw to that quarterback. And it sounds like with Deuce's personality and willingness, they've got a really good asset to work with in this recruiting process.
One of my favorite things in listening to Colin Cowherd over the years, Darren, is that he'll say that the quarterback is always the most confident kid. You know, the good-looking, confident kid ends up playing the quarterback position. Other people just aren't attracted to and gravitate towards the quarterback. So it's definitely good to have your quarterback locked in, have a high-profile guy committed early. And listen, Deuce Knight is a really cool kid. The other prospects love hanging out with Deuce Knight, and he plays the most important position on the field. So there's just a lot of different factors that tie into what you're saying that gives Notre Dame an edge on the recruiting trail. And Darren, I always downplay a little bit prospects recruiting each other. I think it gets hyped up a little bit, like a little bit too much, like, oh, Notre Dame gets Deuce Knight. Well, now every receiver in the country is going to want to come to Notre Dame. Okay, Notre Dame fan. Like, we got to calm down a little bit. But I'm talking to Notre Dame sources, and they really they rave about Deuce Knight as a recruiter, and talk about just how much of an impact he is on the trail. So, I mean, CJ Carr, I think, was like that as well. These high-profile guys who commit early to Notre Dame at the quarterback position, they do have an impact. Now, listen, when these guys commit, it's not like five stars are going to start flocking to Notre Dame, but they definitely do play a role.
And in regard to the 26 quarterbacks that you were discussing a moment ago, is this a situation, in your opinion, that the first of the two that commits is the guy Notre Dame takes? Are we at that point that they're comfortable with both of those guys, and whoever pulls the trigger first is probably going to be the guy?
There are nuances, but my understanding is an emphatic yes.
Okay.
There's differences between Brady Hart and Noah Grubbs. Like, maybe this guy does this thing a little bit better, and this guy needs to improve on this compared to the other guy. But my understanding is that the Notre Dame staff is very comfortable with either. They've communicated to both prospects. It is first in between you two, which I think has kind of pushed up their timelines a little bit. And I think it also is a factor that one of the top quarterbacks in the country, a kid from Tennessee, he just committed to Georgia. So I think that these quarterbacks who are thinking, oh, I want to commit at this point, maybe after my junior season, whatever it is, when they see one of their peers commit, they're like,
The dominoes.
So quarterbacks are starting to come off the board. So, I think it's going to be Grubbs or Hart. Personally, my prediction is for Hart. I did that last week, and I believe you talked about it, Darren. But I wrote in my article where I wrote the prediction, like, I could see a scenario where Grubbs pushes up his timeline and pops before Hart does. Either way, I think Notre Dame would be very happy with Noah Grubbs or Brady Hart, both really good players. And I think, back to our conversation about Deuce Knight, I think both guys would do well, helping build Notre Dame's class early on. But there's also a scenario where, like, Noah Grubbs could get a Bama offer, and then Brady Hart's a Florida legacy, and the Gators just offered him. Like, there's a situation where Notre Dame doesn't get either of these guys, but then they have Troy Hunt visiting on Wednesday. He's an impressive passer from California. Brady Schmeigel is another quarterback from California who I think Notre Dame's in a really good position with, both highly touted four-star quarterbacks. So you got two from the Sunshine State, two from the Golden State. I think that Notre Dame's built out its quarterback board in a really good way, Darren, that they're going to land one of these guys, and it's going to be a strong get.
Our Notre Dame football recruiting update with Mike Singer. I'm Darren Pritchett on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat and the Blue and Gold YouTube channel. So now let's fast forward to prospects visiting Notre Dame this week.
Yeah, look, the staff just comes off of a busy weekend. It's like, all right, no time to rest. We got prospects on campus again this week. So there's a few I wanted to talk about. IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. We talked about Modern Day as a school that Notre Dame hasn't had great success from. They haven't been landing much from IMG Academy in recent years. I know Notre Dame would really love to pick up a pipeline there. Gavin Nix is a linebacker, four-star player, 5'11", 225 pounds. The Irish would love to have him. He got to South Bend late Sunday night, full visit day on Monday. I believe this is Nix's first time in South Bend as well, so an important visit. Here's another prospect from IMG Academy, Raiden Vines-Bright, who's originally from Arizona, just transferred to IMG in the offseason, a four-star per on three's own recruiting rankings. This is a really important visit because going into it, he's admitted to on three that he, like, that Notre Dame has a little bit of work to, you know, to make up for. And this is his first visit, whereas he's been to some other schools a few times. But really important visit. Full day on Monday that Vines-Bright is on campus. Notre Dame has three receiver commits. They love to have Vines-Bright and Derek Meadows to potentially take up to five in this class. Here's another receiver, Brandon Finney from Maryland, who I think that Notre Dame's in a really good spot with as well. So, sure, some Irish fans are talking about, like, Mike, you just said Meadows and Vines-Bright could make five. Well, what about other guys? Like, I don't know all the answers to this, but all I know is that Notre Dame's, they got three committed. They could take up the five. They have a handful of receivers who are talented, who are making their way to campus, and Brandon Finney is definitely among them. And I hear really good things about where the Irish stand. This could be a huge visit for Notre Dame. I just get the vibe that Finney could be one of those kids who just visits and it's like, this is my first time. I get it. I love Notre Dame. I'm in. We'll see. That's my gut feeling, at least as a possibility. But yeah, we'll see coming out of the visit. But Brandon Finney, 6'2", 185 pounds from Maryland, one to keep an eye on. And then Troy Hahn, talked about him a moment ago, from California, 6'3", 195 pounds, picked up his offer from Notre Dame, I believe, in January, on campus. Big visit. Keep an eye on him. We talked more about Brady Hart and Noah Grubbs at the quarterback position for Notre Dame. I think Troy Hunt's a little bit of an X factor. Texas is considered the team to beat per the on-three recruiting prediction machine, but we'll see how things progress for him. And then lastly, Darren, Notre Dame has a at least was expected to. I'm not 100% sure if he's making it in, but Darren Akinagbon from Hillside, New Jersey, a 6'5", 240-pound pass rusher, considered a Georgia lean, but I believe he was supposed to make it in starting Tuesday. Now, I'm not certain if that visit's still set in stone, but it was at least as of last week. So there's a few of the names visiting Notre Dame this week.
Of course, much more on recruiting from Mike Singer if you're a subscriber to Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com.
Yeah, please do check it out using the promo code UND1 for new subscribers. That is our offer for you guys. $1 for 2 months when you use the promo code UND1. So please check that out at blueandgold.com. All of the spring practice coverage, all the recruiting updates and everything in between, talking, you know, with thousands of Notre Dame Notre Dame fans on the Blue Simoji message board. We would love to have you at blueandgold.com.
And 1,000 different opinions on Riley Leonard's ankle injury and what it means for the season, all at blueandgold.com. But you know what? It's nice to have good recruiting the last couple of years at the quarterback position. Things seem a whole lot better than what might have been 2-3 years ago had this happened. So recruiting is paying off at that position. Mike, enjoyed it. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Darren.
That's Mike Singer, Notre Dame football recruiting insider at Blue and Gold Illustrated. Read all about it at blueandgold.com. We will take a timeout. We've got more Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat coming up in just a moment on your home of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, Sports Radio 960 WSBT, streaming live at WSBTRadio.com.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.